Once again, I'd like to welcome you to Windows HPC Server Development, the MPI application model. Now, without any further delay, I'd like to turn today's live meeting over to your presenter, Wenming. Wenming, you now have the floor.
Thank you, Adam. Hello, everyone. Welcome to my Windows HPC Server 2008 session. Our topic today is on the Microsoft MPI stack and the SDK improvements. Here's our today's agenda. There are seven topics today. First, I will give you an overview of the HPC programming model, and then the Microsoft MPI introduction and the benchmarks of supercomputing, and the Microsoft HPC 2008 MPI stack offering. The next item is the rich development tool ecosystem that we have surrounding the Microsoft Windows platform. MPI.NET, numerical libraries, debugging, and finally ETW tracing, MPI tracing. That stands for event tracing for Windows. It's a way to measure performance and find bottlenecks on your MPI applications. So what is high performance computing exactly? For me, it is a quest for that 1 petahertz CPU box with 10 terabytes of RAM. Unfortunately, that is not likely to be available within our lifetime. So we'll have to settle for an alternative, perhaps a 10,000 node cluster with super fast interconnect amongst the computer nodes. I'd like to emphasize that a supercomputer cluster must have low latency and high bandwidth connections. Otherwise, the internet would be considered a supercompute cluster. Supercomputers are designed to solve large computational problems, and they're often associated with scientific research. In the past, only government labs and academia institutions and companies with large R&D budgets, such as IBM or Microsoft, could afford them. And in recent years, HPC community also put an emphasis in high productivity, as you will see later in my slides. The Microsoft 2008 High Performance Computing Server addresses both high performance and high productivity. So who does high performance computing and why do they do it? Supercomputing is really crucial for science, for the 21st century. For a long time, people have been only theorists or experimentalists. But these guys work together to develop scientific theories and explain natural phenomena. The incredible development in supercomputers in recent years have enabled peer validation and new kinds of experiments via simulation that were not possible to do even only a few years ago. According to some of the scientists, it's rising as the third modality of science along with theory and experimentalists, and it's becoming an integral part of scientific research and development. So traditionally, supercomputer has been utilized by industries like automobile engineering, aerospace, oil and gas for years, and as you will see later in my slides, I have several applications that already have been ported to the Windows 2008 platform, commercial applications. They are all in this area. Starting in the recent years, supercomputing is starting to help pharmaceutical and even financial services companies to become more economically competitive. So what type of problems are these industries and institutions trying to solve exactly? So they're trying to solve large-scale time-space complexity problems. So time in this context is really measured in the amount of CPU time you're using for your application. And space, I usually refer to the physical RAM that you have or the physical RAM that you can fit your programs in. The cluster distributes both CPU power and memory across thousands of ordinary servers to make a large-scale problem fit. So some of these problems are nano simulations, medical, fusion, surface flow, geoscience, computational fluid dynamics, and optimization. And essentially, most of these problems or simulations are solving a set of math equations. I usually like to divide them into three classes of math problems. The PDE, or time-stepping problems. So you're simulating a process. It's a time variance problem. And then there's nonlinear equations that you're solving, or linear equations, or usually people refer to them as linear systems. It's essentially solving a matrix times a unknown vector equals to another vector, and you're solving for the unknown vector here. So another class of parallel problems are embarrassingly parallel or stateless. So some examples include risk management, ray tracing, Monte Carlo, image processing, blast search, genetic algorithms, and other interactive type of problems. So an example for a unit of work in ray tracing is per pixel that you're rendering, and Monte Carlo is per randomized simulation that you're doing. So now let's look at the programming model that solves these two major classes of problems. So the first programming model is the traditional message passing library, which is what linear solvers are often based on. These require very low latency and high bandwidth because there's a lot of data movement within the computer nodes. And they're usually non-active or batch. They could run for days or maybe months. And sometimes these solvers can be also very difficult to scale because the bandwidth is limited. You're never going to be having a higher bandwidth than within the actual computer. So going across the network, the bandwidth decreases and the latency increases. So the second programming model I like to present to you here is the SOA programming model, which is service-oriented architecture. So for this type of problems, they're usually interactive or stateless, and in our case, we have a new implementation by Microsoft. It's called the WCF Broker Service Model in HPC Server 2008. It is essentially a manager for a farm of web services running on the cluster. This type of application model allows a new class of interactive supercomputing applications. I will be doing a webcast on October 2nd showing you how to do pricing of bond and scale out of Excel calculations to a web service farm. Let's move on to the next topic. So I will give you an introduction very briefly of the MPI programming model. So MPI was started in 1992. I believe it's the Supercomputing 1992 committee that started the work there. And it's an industrial standard. Many of our partners and other companies have implemented the MPI stack. If you write a piece of code, then they will work with all of them. Intel, IBM, HP, NEC, and of course Cray, and some of the open source implementations are OpenMPI, LAM, and MPitch2. And the Microsoft MPI stack is actually based on the MPitch2 from ANL, Oregon National Lab. So these type of applications are usually a batch submission, and you don't interact them for days or months after they have been submitted. They require, once again, very efficient communication for matrix operations. They must be low latency and high bandwidth. And MPI consists of three parts. This first one is its API. I think there's a little delay there when I turn the page there. So the first part of the MPI stack is the 160 plus functions, and they include send, receive, and gather, reduce are some of the examples. And of course, they need a secure process for launching and running the communication runtime. And finally, the MPI exec, which is very similar to launching a job by specifying how many nodes you want to run it on and which machines you want to run. And the Microsoft MPI stack has added additional features such as affinity to cores, specific cores, and also allowing other benefits. So now you understand why HPC, what HPC stands for in the traditional sense. It has to be low latency, high bandwidth interconnecting a large set of computer nodes. Just like ordinary PCs or Macs, the machine builders constantly like to tell you about how fast their machines are. Every quarter, the top500run.org publishes a benchmark for the top 500 fastest computers in the world. For HPC, fortunately, they use the same benchmark, and it's called the LIMPAC. LIMPAC is a basic linear algebra library that uses MPI for communication and solves linear systems. So usually these benchmarks are measured in flops or floating point operations per second. But don't let that fool you, because how your application runs often has nothing to do with the benchmark numbers of a supercomputer. So the other important number of the benchmark for the HPC benchmark is the efficiency utilization. It's essentially saying, when running the benchmark, how much your computer resources actually or can be utilized. So the faster interconnect you have, the better the utilization will be. So before I came to Microsoft, I actually had access to several of the top 500 machines. Number four on the list was Ranger, which is a new system put together by the National Science Foundation at Texas Advanced Computing Center. And Jacquard is number five on the list, and it's at Oak Ridge National Lab. And the current number one on that list is DOE's Roadrunner, and made a few news in recent months. And the Roadrunner is able to achieve 1 petaflop per second peak. And that is why I put that joke up on the front page, where I like to have that petahertz computer. My understanding is there are more petaflop class machines coming online. One of the more notable ones is the Japanese Ministry of Education is putting online a 10 petaflop supercomputer in 2010. And that would cost in the orders of $1 billion. Let's move on. So this slide shows you the Microsoft achievement in terms of HPC Server 2008. The product was started in 2005, I believe, by the general manager over there, Krill, with only 4 CPUs, and it ran a top speed of 9 gigaflops, and I mean 9 gigaflops, not teraflops. And then it started climbing up in terms of flops and efficiency. As you can see, it really took off after HPC Server 2008 started developing. Our latest achievement is number 23 on the list with 9,500 cores. It's also with an extremely impressive efficiency number of 78%. And I will tell you why that is the case in the next few slides. Let's move on to the next agenda here. So this is a brief overview of the Microsoft High Performance Computing Server 2008 MPI features. So the most exciting feature for me is the remote DMA, or remote direct memory access via network direct. It's got very low latency, and it bypasses all the TCP/IP stack, goes directly to hardware, does the improvement in efficiency for the Microsoft 2008 server. And now there are four networking paths supported, and TCP/IP, direct memory access, and two more that I will show you later. And also the MPI.net. It's a new managed MPI library API, and it's in collaboration with Indiana University. The MPI.net implementation is also extremely efficient, as you will see later in the presentation. And another feature is the ETW tracing. ETW stands for Event Tracing for Windows, and it has been around for many years for internal use of Windows performance. And now the MPI stack is capable of sending information through to the kernel and allow you to see that performance information. Finally, we have additional improvements such as shared memory model enhancement and affinity options. So where you can affinitize your MPI processor to a specific core or a CPU to avoid context switch. So some of the improvements are fairly dramatic if you use very fast CPUs. So Network Direct. So once again, this is probably one of the most exciting features that I have to report to you. The new RDMA networking interface is really built for speed, very high speed and very low latency, and also stability. The latency has been cut down to microseconds, and this is something that makes it almost as fast as that you're on the computer next to you is almost as fast as, you know, transferring files from the same computer. The goals for the product team at the time was to make sure that the hardware, our implementation has similar performance to hardware optimized MPI stacks, and that has obviously been achieved. And we also coordinated with a networking team a long-term plan to implementation, and the actual implementation here is capable of four networking paths. One is the shared memory, so essentially that's between processor and a motherboard and TCP/IP stack, the normal Ethernet, and of course WinSock Direct, and finally the new RDMA networking interface. And then RDMA is only available for the MPI stack, and they're not available for some of the newer application models such as WCS. So the HPC team is working with vendors to develop and distribute these drivers for this new interface. And noticeably, the hardware is InfiniBand, which is used by most of the top 500 run computer networks. So here's a view of what MPI looks like on the compute cluster. There are MPI services running, and then you use the MPI exec to launch these processes on each of the nodes, and then they can start the communication. It really is a very simple programming model. So MPI.net, the flavor of C#, and we have a new API that's implemented by Indiana University, obviously. It makes things a lot easier for programmers, and has very little overhead, actually. As little as, you know, maybe 1 or 2%, and in the worst case, it has maybe 12% overhead, the worst case scenario that according to their website. And this is related to high-productivity computer. If C# can save programmers lots of time and headaches by managing memory for them, it would also help them to create better object-oriented code. And we'll have a demo of C# and what it looks like But here is the flavor of the object-oriented programming model for wrapping the MPI API. So the last item in this agenda is node socket core allocation. Because the proliferation of multi-core systems, now they're made being made aware in our MPI stack. So Windows HPC Server can help your application, you know, do better in these multi-core systems to make sure your applications are aware of the physical characteristics of these systems. So the next topic is one of my favorite, the rich development tools ecosystem for the Microsoft Windows platform. Here's a quote from the Office of Science and Technology, and the emphasis should be placed on time to solve problems and common software environments for scientific computation. Input desktop to high-end systems will enhance productivity gains by promoting ease of use and manageability of a system. So for many scientists and engineers, a platform that can help them to get the job done quickly is one that they will use. Windows HPC 2008 Server offers a rich ecosystem of applications and development tools to meet the demand of today's researchers. So here are some of the tools and offerings that we have surrounding the server. So the first item is obviously compilers. You need to build your software. Microsoft Visual C++ is one of them. And MPI can also be invoked by C#, obviously. And I believe F#, we have also have a F# offering. And traditionally, that MPI has already been wrapped in Python. So you can actually run a Python MPI in our cluster by sending it to the job scheduler. And here's another one of my favorite, Intel C++ or and Fortran compiler suite. It really helps me to port traditional Unix applications because it implements the NC99, which the Microsoft Visual C++ doesn't yet do. And of course, there's PGI, C++, and Fortran compilers available. And MainGW is another open source software. I have been successful at building a Windows application using the MainGW GCC and GFortran compilers. And debugger. Debugger is one of the more exciting areas that Microsoft has developed. I will show you later an MPI debugger that's available on, for the Visual Studio platform. Alinea also has a new, their debugger ported to the Windows platform. And finally, PGI has an MPI debugger. Unfortunately, I haven't had a chance to look at it. And of course, we have introduced a new feature in the MPI stack with ETW. You can also use that for debugging. Profiler, ETW event tracing for Windows, that's available from within the MPI stack, and the .NET has a profiler, and Visual Studio has one as well. And these are non-cluster, but you can also use them for thread type of debugging. And there are more and better profilers offerings coming online. Workbench. So MATLAB, Mathematica, and all these other applications has always been running wonderfully on the Microsoft platform. And some of the new things I'd like to point out to you is some of the open source parallel workbench and visualization tools. One is Visit. Visit is a parallel visualization tool, and Purview is another one from Los Alamos. Of course, there's SharePoint. You can use SharePoint to submit jobs, and there are systems being developed at this time. And also Windows Workflow that can be used by scientists to validate their work and make sure their work process is reproducible. And of course, there's SUA, service service for Unix applications, and it's essentially another subsystem that runs on top of the kernel. It's, you know, a peer as peer to Win32. You can use that as a Unix runtime. And some of the runtimes libraries available are Intel's OpenMP. That's for developing thread-based applications. And of course, there's the MSMPI and Microsoft.NET binding and cluster WCF, which modeling, which I will show you in the October 2nd webcast. And finally, we have some very exciting demos that coming from Microsoft is a GPU graphics library. And CUDA apparently works very well on Windows, and it has been integrated with to our cluster. And of course, the most important part of software developers' arsenal is math libraries for traditional HPC applications. One is the, we have a lot of them available, Intel Math Library and AMD Math Library. BNI has a .NET Math Library. I think it's their Intel Math Library. And the NAG Math Library is also available, and there's also various open source libraries that I have seen. One of the math library you will see today is the PETI, which is a portable scientific linear, PDE solver, and of course Trilinos and various other open source libraries. So this is a developer's view of the of a cluster connectivity. So normally, you would develop a lot of things on your workstation, not on the cluster. For demo purposes, we're going to move everything onto a cluster head node. But you don't necessarily have to do that. But the requirement for doing development is the Microsoft Visual Studio and the Compute Cluster Pack, or the HPC SDK for version 2. So here are some of the Windows HPC 2008 applications that are available. So commercially, we have our partners Ansys, DeFluent, and Schlumberger's Eclipse, which is for modeling of oil wells and surfaces, and also Similia's Abacus. It's a mechanical engineering modeling tool, and more of them are available on HTTP Microsoft.com. HPC partners. You can go on there and look at other commercial partners that are available, have their tools available on our platform. And some of the open source libraries include PETI, it's a PDE solver, and Visit, it's an open source parallel visualization tool, and RaxML. RaxML stands for Randomized Accelerated Maximum Likelihood, and apparently it's a search parallel search for large genetic trees. So I have a quick demo of what the MPI C++ and MPI.NET looks like. It will be fairly simple, and let me switch over to my terminal service. So over here I have a C++ MPI application. So this application is really simple. All it's doing is send a message. If you're the head node, you send a message to the next rank or next node. And you are not the head node, you pass it on, and if you're the head node, you receive everybody's, the last guy's process and print it out. So it's pretty straightforward. For every single MPI application, you always have to run MPI init, and then there's the comp size, the receive, the size of your run. So if you say minus MPI exec minus n, it will just be a number of processes that you're opening up. And of course, the rank is essentially which process in this number process as you are. So that's who you are. And here we're just getting the host name. And if you're a worker, you receive it and pass it on. And if you are the head node, the first process really, you get the message and essentially print it out. So what we're going to do here, and we're just going to build it. It looks like it finished. As you can see, this is entirely a C-based API. So to run this app, to run the application, it's pretty straightforward. What I'm going to do here is to just say MPI run, exec actually, minus N. I would say 10, so launch 10 processes. Unfortunately, I don't have the MPI exec in the path, so I am going to go to the next one. Here's a .NET application and what it looks like. So in the program.cs, this is entirely written in .NET. And let me quickly show you. So this is the .NET syntax. You're including an MPI. The library, and in the main program, we have MPI dot set up the environment, and that's essentially calling MPI dot init, and then we have the communicator, and we're setting that to be the com dot world, and it's essentially doing very similar things here. And if you have less than two, then it's really just one process. You don't want that. This is a MPI program. You need to have two or more processes. Similarly, to the first CPP program here, is that we have MPI com rank equals zero, so you're the head node or the first process, and otherwise you're just going to receive the message and pass it on in a ring. So let me see if I can get that working for you. That's available here. I may have typed it wrong over at the second window. So bear with me for 1 second. Minus N. N is for number of processors. So here I'm going to type 10 and the actual executable, ring dot, in this case it's the ring.net.exe. So it's pretty straightforward, and it says I am the head node, and everybody else reports their number. So this just gives you a flavor of what the two programming APIs, how they differ. So let me go back to the slides. So I have another demo here. This is the PETI, which is a portable, extensible toolkit for scientific computing, and essentially it's a PDE solver library. So as many of you know that many physical systems are modeled using time-stepping solvers, and essentially, well, they're called PDEs. And then these PDE solvers are depend on nonlinear solvers, and nonlinear solvers depend on the linear solvers. And finally, the PC actually stands for preconditioner. Obviously, you can see that this is a using an iterative method. So there are two types of methods for solving linear equations. One is iterative, and the other one is direct. So iterative methods require a preconditioner. So let me do a quick demo on the PETI, and that just shows you how the open source software usually works by not using the Visual Studio environment. So what you're looking at here is a signaling window, and if you look carefully, this is a link line for building some of these examples. So here I'm using the Microsoft compiler, CL, and I am just compiling this example 34 here, and then include various libraries, and some of them here are the FQC LAPAC, which is a replacement for LIMPAC, by the way. Actually, LAPAC and the BLAS are a replacement for LIMPAC. And also, there's some of the Windows libraries. And obviously, you can see that I'm not using GCC or using any of the compilers within the Sigmoin environment because I'm using CL here. And then, finally, it includes the Microsoft library, which is the HPC SDK. So if you have that installed, that will work. So there are 32-bit and 64-bit MSMPI libraries available here. And I would highly recommend the 64-bit, and because it takes a little bit of work to get the 32-bit to work, because on the stack they use a standard call convention, and it requires a little tweak, and that can be seen on my blog, and I can point to you after this presentation. So let me just compile one of them for you. So as you can see that on Windows, you can have your traditional Unix environment and compile things the way you like if you're moving from that platform. So let me run some of these, run a PETSY process here. So there are two ways of running an application. One is through command line. You can say job submit, just on the command line type job submit. And the other way is to use the actual GUI. So here, this is the Windows 2008 cluster monitoring tool. Under here, there's a job management and node management. Node management shows you that I have two nodes here. One is the DPHPC1 and DPHPC2. So this is a heat map, shows you what the machines are doing at a glance. So what I want to do is to submit a PETSY run. So I already have some of the these jobs already run. So it's in the finished panel, I have ran some of these. So what I can do is I can copy it. And if you're not going to remember everything on the command line, all the options on the command line, you can use this to easily you know, change things. So a job includes many tasks, and under the task, you can edit the actual task, and we can change that to maybe 40,000, that's a 40,000 by 40,000 matrix. And my window is just big enough to see the submit window, submit button here. So I'm going to change that and copied a job and with all the parameters, and I'm going to hit submit. So as you can see, it notifies me that job 34, the state has changed to submit. And over here, you can see that it's actually running right now. It's probably going to take about 20 to 30 seconds to finish running. So it looks like that finished, just finished, and you can see that it moved from the active queue to the finished area, so that's the run that I had. So let's look at where the output is. So let's go back to the task list. Here's a job detail of when it ran and how much time it took. And also here's the log of what it actually did. So let me show you where the actual, files, output file it went. So here it looks like it went to C, scratch, EX23 out. So let's go look at that file. Under the scratch directory, I have, looks like it just finished. And voila, we have solved a linear equation with 40,000 by 40,000 dimension. So as you can see that a lot of these open source solvers work just fine on Windows, and it's relatively straightforward to get them to work. And I do have a blog entry of how that was how to get that working in both 32-bit and 64-bit for Windows. And I also just demonstrated to you what the job management console looks like. And if you can't remember everything command line, you can certainly use this to submit your jobs and modify them. Okay, so let's get back to the slide. So I have another demo here, and this is a demo, a video of a parallel visualization tool. It's called Vizit, and the other one is Pavray. Pavray is a volume rendering a ray tracing tool for making really good-looking animations and graphics. So before coming to Microsoft, I worked for a company called TechX Corporation, where we did accelerator physics. And some of the things we built is similar to the recent news of Hadron Collider. Hadron Collider is essentially taking two proton beams and you hit them together and try to create the effect of a Big Bang. But what I'm about to show you is an animation of the part where it injects the beam into the actual accelerator, you know, the long ring. So just to show you that what kind of all these tools are available on Windows, and it can do amazing type of visualization and scientific work. So let me switch to the movie. So for some of you, this movie is about 10 megabytes. For some of you, it may take a while for it to actually download and look at. If you guys haven't been able to see it within a minute, please raise your hand, and I can certainly make this video available later after the presentation, to just to save some time here. So what this is showing you here in the movie is the electromagnetic lines in a crab cavity. Crab cavity is a machine, very expensive machine. This is a design for the, not for the Hadron Collider, but for the ILC, International Linear Collider, that is about to be built. This is the model. And just to prove my point is that this simulation ran on thousands of processors and was then post-processed using parallel visualization tool and then volume rendered using Pavray. If you want to build something like that, it would cost $1 billion or billions of dollars to actually do the make the physical device. But in simulation, it really helps scientists and engineers to do things very quickly and you know, it probably cost $50,000 or hundreds of thousand dollars, very minor fraction of doing an actual physical device. That's why computer simulations are becoming more and more important in terms of competition for industries and science as a nation. So I will wait another 30 seconds for some of you to actually see the movie. And then we will move on to the next topic. Okay, so I will go ahead and move on to the next slide here. So debugging. Debugging parallel applications, debugging regular applications is already very difficult, and not to mention debugging parallel applications. It's really difficult to do because it's somewhat, or, well, I would say always non-deterministic, and also you have run into concurrency issues. Having a standard library does solve a lot of these problems for you. But on the other hand, it does also make your debugging process longer when it comes to, you know, really low-level things. So the best practice is to write your sequential version of your application first and then put in the parallel so that you can have even just a, you know, baseline code and make sure that it's correct. And finally, you want after everything has been done correctly, you want then you go into the profiling optimization. So debugging options, some of the options are available. One is, you know, print style debugging, and that usually is what a lot of people do actually. It's done by more people than using actual tools. And on Unix, we have lots of good tools such as TotalView and other things. And Microsoft Visual Studio now has a very good parallel debugging, and then there's a lot more offerings coming up. They're really working hard to bring up the parallel debugging, make sure it's very easy to do. So let me show you a quick demo of what it looks like by switching back to the terminal. Some of the other debuggers that have been ported to Windows is Alinea's parallel debugger, and also the Portland group has another offering. Okay, now here comes the actual demo. So it's very straightforward. What I do is go back to the Visual Studio project. It has already been opened, so I have to close this. It's already open, so let me go back to the actual thing. So under in order to invoke the parallel debugger, what you do is you right-click on the project and select Properties. And under Debugging, you can choose the MPI Cluster Debugger. And this is the MPI run command is MPI exec, and then you give it an argument of two items, two items. And then, of course, the most important thing is the MSISHIM. Make sure that the location is shown correctly. And then you can just start the parallel debugging process. So it's pretty straightforward. Go to the menu, and it will start two processes. And first, it stopped. I put two breakpoints there. If you are a worker node, it will show you that your rank, obviously, this rank is 1, so he's not 0. 0 is the head process. And then I will hit on continue. Notice the process has changed at the process indicator here, which means now it's actually at the second thread. So now, if you look at the rank is 0. You're the head process. So this is how it just gives you a flavor of what the debugger looks like and what kind of things you can do with it. Comes with the, I think it's a separate additional software you have to install for the Visual Studio. Let me get back to the slides here. So we're at the final agenda of our discussed topics. So for ETW tracing is a new feature added to the MPI stack, and it's very useful for finding performance bottlenecks. It works very well with the jump shot visualization tool. And for the sake of saving time here, I will go directly to the demo for you. It's very easy to run the tool. What you do is you first run your MPI program, and that invokes the MPI exec, and it will run the MPI process with the dash trace argument, and that will produce an event tracing log. And then once that log has been produced, you want to run some post-processing on it. The first step is to run the time sync of all the processes. So different computers have different time, slight time variances. And the next thing you do is to take the log and convert it to a format that the jump shot can actually look at. So we're going to go back to the demo here. Here's the process, and you will see that in a second. I would prefer to show it to you in simple text. Okay, so let me close some of these things. So here's the steps for running the MPI trace. So first I want run the MPI exec with -n tracing option and with a dash trace option, and I'm running it as 5 processes, and then I run the time sync and then the ETL to C log format so that the jump shot could understand it. And I believe that the jump shot will actually take this and then convert it again to ETL to, I think it's a S log format. So let's run this very quickly. Voila. So we can see quickly what it's doing. So first it ran the MPI process. This is actually the CPP example that I showed you earlier. It ran 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 processes. And then the next thing it does is it time syncs all these ETW tracing for each of the processes. And then finally, it rewrites it and converts to C-log. So I actually have jump shot installed here. So let's look at what this application actually did. So here in my home directory, it's the C log edit that it produced. So let's open it. And it will ask you, would you like to convert it? I would say yes. And then I'll hit the convert button. And obviously I had the previous run, so it's going to replace that. And hit OK. And now, I'm not sure if you guys can see it, but let me use the magnifying glass here and go to the end and show you what it looks like. So here's the legend. The blue is descending and the green is the receiving part of it. So obviously the first zero is going to wait the longest. It will send its first message, and then it was received by the other processes, and then it goes back to it. So it's essentially showing you a ring-like behavior. So my program obviously looks correct. So that would be the event tracing for Windows and a demo. So here, slide number 41, we have, what does this enable? It shows you, the ETW tracing shows you what MPI, where your program spends most of its time in MPI tracing. So here is a typical CFD code, and looks like it does a receive, spend a lot of time in receive, and I'll reduce. So you may want to optimize your code based on that. And this is a jump shot, and this is something that we just saw. Finally, we have additional commercial tools that are available that would read our data format, which is the Intel's Analyzer. That's available from Intel's website. So finally, the conclusion. And first of all, I'd like to thank all of you for attending this, and I want you to go home getting these 2 points. One is that the Microsoft HPC Server 2008 has high performance, and it's very comparable to what the current supercomputers are running in terms of efficiency and speed. And finally, we have the high productivity, which is the key for the Windows platform. And there are various commercial and open source tools available for development, and it really makes the developer a lot more productive. And we also have some of the new enhancements in our software, such as MPI, with Network Direct. That's a key feature. And also processor and core affinity feature, which works very well in multi-core systems. Our final slide here has some resources for you. I have a blog on MSDN called the HPC Tracker, and it shows you a lot of the porting resources for and how to run various software on the Microsoft Windows platform. And I would also appreciate feedback, any kind of feedback, and what kind of things you would like to see. On the TechNet, my colleague Giovanni Machetti has IT Pro type of blogs, and he will show you how to set up these clusters and run them in virtual machines. Or one of my favorite blogs he had is HPC and UFO Explained. Of course, we have connect.com where you can download RC2, version RC2, and RTM is coming up pretty soon here as well. And we also have the HPC community site, windowshpc.net, and other resources available. I think this concludes my webcast, and thank you all for very much for attending my webcast. And I will take any questions you may have.
Ladies and gentlemen, to ask additional questions, you can go ahead and open your Q&A pane, type any questions you may have into the question manager, and click Ask. Okay, looks like the queue is empty. Wenming, do you want me to close?
Yeah, please do.
Okay, thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes today's live meeting. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect.